Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. He's Kyle. Not Kyle Orton. Just Kyle.
Not Kyle Orton.
We are here after a loss at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens. And the Kyle. First,
we're back where we belong. It's not a victory Scottcast. It's a wallowing Scottcast.
We're out here. We're in defeat.
We want heads to roll. We want executions. We want Tyson Bagent. We want we want all the things.
We want our Tyson Baguette. Yeah.
We do. You know, it's funny because, like, I felt a little more like you did your pumpkin patching during the second half of that game.
I did. I left at the end of the first half and I went to do a pumpkin
patch. Getting dicey. So I feel like you didn't get to do all of it live. So like live, I was sort of feeling, I was understanding people's frustration and the dooming that was happening a little bit live as it happened. It certainly didn't feel good. And the Caleb interception, we'll get to Caleb here in a second. The Caleb interception, definitely, it was a bad one. It was not hard in the moment to feel the doom and oh my God, Twitter. Oh man, there are some tweets out there. Good Lord, from people. And I'm not judging. I want to make that very, very clear. I bet I've doomed over the Bears harder than any of you people listening to this have ever doomed. I have said things. I have ended friendships. I have relatives that I haven't spoken to since the 2011 NFC Championship game. I'm not judging anybody. But in my old age and my more medicated age, I have learned to not tweet my thoughts as the games are happening and to wait until, you know, especially I've had time to watch the tape and all that. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of frustration. There's a lot of concern. I think, you know, you turn and you watch the tape, and at least on the Caleb part of things, we'll get into Caleb here in a second, I don't think it was as bad as it looked. Actually, I think a lot of it was, there was some really good forest that was being missed in all the trees on one side. On the other side, it's not the part that people are dooming about with this game because everyone's decided to doom about the quarterback. I am dooming about this defense. I'm dooming pretty hard.
Yeah.
Because they ain't getting any healthier. And if that's what they got without the guys they've lost, whoo, fucking boy.
Yeah, I had a very strange reaction to this game. As you said, I left at halftime. I went to do my annual pumpkin patching with my wife and daughter and niece, and we had a wonderful time. And when I got back, I looked at the score, and I was like, well, that sucks. But, of course, I had it recorded, and I hadn't looked at the conversations that have been going on, you know, in the Discord, on the internet, overall. And so I just went in. And I was like, well, I'll just, you know, watch all the plays right in a row. I could just skip 10 seconds ahead and I have to deal with commercials. So I watched all the plays and I thought to myself, oh, Caleb had a really nice game. Like, I'm so glad his timing is on. And he had that bad throw to Rome in the first, and that interception, you can't have that there. That's awful. But otherwise, got a lot of nice 20-yard throws, darts to guys who recovered. Like, he just seems like he's completely in the flow of the offense. It sucks that our red zone offense sucked that bad. But, like, you know, it was a hard-fought game. We lost. We do this to teams all the time, right? The Bears do that to teams all the time. It's just the Ravens doing it to us this time. It's okay. Let's see how people are feeling. And it was that meme of Donald Glover opening the door with
walking
the pizzas.
In with the pizza boxes and it's fire.
And everybody is like, actually, yeah. Caleb is a bust. He should be shot in the face. Ben Johnson needs to go. I'm tired of this team. My family hates me. You know, that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, I can't believe it. I'm shocked.
Yeah. Well, and I'll preface this discussion by saying that, like, I really do understand the frustration because Travis, you always crack me up and I say this because Travis is like the only person in America that has been a lifelong Bears fan and somehow carries no baggage or trauma from it. Like every season this man just resets and he's like, maybe it'll be different this time. I don't know. It'll be fine. He has never confused Caleb Williams with Justin Fields, with Mitch Trubisky. He doesn't lump them all together. He doesn't do it. The man's just never, I've always admired that about him.
Yeah.
I meanwhile, you know, inside me there are two wolves, and one of them is a meatball drenched in jardinera or marinara, not jardinera. Oh my God, all of our actual Chicago listeners are gonna fucking murder me for that. You know what? I confused jardinera with marinara. I think I have to resign. I have to. This is my Tom Brenneman moment here.
You can put it on a sub. You can put it in a taco salad.
Anyways, no. There's a meatball inside me at all times, and he carries all that trauma, man. Like, I get it. I get it. I if you want me to sit here and say that I'm not watching what Drake May is doing, and first of all, am I surprised by what Drake May is doing? Fucking no. Go back and listen to the Scottcast. We never fell for the anti-Drake May propaganda. We told you the kid was going to be fucking great.
We were very pro-Drake May.
Do I feel what Drake May is doing? Did it suck when Jaden Daniels did what he did last year? Do I feel all of that with Caleb? Do I feel that urge every week to be like, God, just let it be the week where you put it all together and just let me have another good week where for 1 week I don't have to fight with anybody stupid online about Caleb? I feel that. I feel that, man. I don't blame any of you for feeling that. The only difference is that I do have a rational, intellectual Bruce Banner to my Hulk that's going, okay, man, but calm down. Because here's a couple facts for you. Whether Drake May is playing really well or not has no bearing on Caleb Williams' development. Because Drake May is not only outplaying your average second-year quarterback right now. Drake May is outplaying Patrick Mahomes. Like, do the fucking Kansas City Chiefs need to have a conversation about their quarterback and why he's not playing up to the level of Drake May? Like, put that aside.
Pat Mahomes started the game last night on Monday night, throwing two interceptions and just kind of looking generally like dog shit. And I was like, wow, I guess they need to throw him out. They need to replace Pat Mahomes, don't they?
But it's like, so the standard that Drake May is setting, it's insane. Like, just put that aside for now. But like, basically with Caleb Williams, and I think this is something that, where you and I are football freaks, especially, and we're constantly watching non-Chicago sports. Because that's the problem with the Chicago local media is just fucking showing their ass up and down this whole week. Yeah. And for the last couple of weeks, they have been. And that's not new. God knows you and I have been enemies of most of the Chicago beat for a very long time. But like, my favorite running joke right now is on The Score. Every week they have Kurt Warner come in. And they ask him about Caleb. And Kurt Warner is perfect for this because, one, Kurt Warner played in Mike Martz's offense. And Ben Johnson's offense, a lot of the DNA in what he does in terms of route concepts and everything, and the drops, and all of that is very Mike Martz. So Kurt Warner understands Ben Johnson's offense very well and what it's trying to accomplish. And how hard it is. Because, you know, the thing about the greatest show on turf, the Mike Martz offense, all that stuff, it scores so many points when it's at full power because there aren't any easy answers to it because it attacks the whole field. It just destroys everything. But it's hard. It's hard to install. It's hard to run. It takes so many moving pieces, and that's why the Bears are being just absolutely butt-fucked by penalties right now. And it's not just like, I hear a lot of people saying, like, Caleb needs to overcome. Who cares about penalties? I need you guys to understand, this is not just like a lot of penalties that the Bears are committing right now. They have the single greatest penalty deficit through seven games in terms of how many penalties have been called on them versus their opponents this century. Like, since 2000. Since the millennium. X-Files was still on the air the last time a team committed more penalties through seven games than this. Like, it's not just a small amount of penalties they're being asked to overcome. And they actually are overcoming it to a fairly unreasonable degree. Like, they are number one in the NFL right now in explosive plays per game. They're still a top 15 scoring DVOA, whatever you want to call it, offense, and a reasonable metric, despite these penalties, despite all these fuck-ups. But, like, it's a lot that they're being asked to overcome. And granted, they're doing it themselves, but still. But anyways, so Kurt Warner understands about how hard all this shit is. And he's also Kurt Warner is never influenced by the results. He only cares about process. It's very funny. Drake May had that game last week where he was, 21 of 23 or 19 of 21 or something.
Yeah.
And Kurt Warner was out here criticizing him and was like, hey, but you know what? Completion percentage is great. We love that. But like, there were plays he took off scrambling when there were answers for him in the offense. I don't like that impatience. I don't like that he's taking those hits. I don't like that he's taking those sacks. And that is one thing about Drake May, folks. He's got a sack rate over 11% right now. Go back, look through the history of the league. How many guys kept up very good high-level play for a long time while taking a sack on over 10% of their dropbacks? It's not a lot. So I do think that's going to come to a head at some point for him.
And that was a concern he had in college.
That was the main reason. Yeah, that was the difference maker for me, Caleb, and Drake May, was how often Drake May scrambled and, like, actually scrambled. Caleb scrambles to throw. Drake May, Jaden Daniels, they scrambled to run. So Drake May takes off to, like, scramble, like, 12% of the time. That's a lot. That's unsustainably high. He takes sacks right now over 10% of the time. That's unsustainably high. So that's a lot of hits he's taking. Now, he's not built like Jaden Daniels. He's kind of built like a brick shit house. Hopefully, yep. Maybe he's Josh Allen, and he can just take it, take it, take it. But it is a concern still.
We love it when a young man can take it and take it and take it.
God, yes. With the Jardinera and the Marinara both.
That's right. All over those meatballs.
All the Naras on his meatballs. But Kurt Warner is the perfect guy for that, though, because he doesn't get distracted by results. He talks about process. So he's watching Drake May, and he's like, yeah, that's cool. Nice completion. But you took off scrambling here when you had a guy open. You should have thrown it to that guy. There are easy answers in your offense. So he's watching Caleb every week, and he's seeing the same thing. And this is a guy who last year was so critical of Caleb, he said at one point that he thought he should be benched because he thought that the game was too fast for him and the kid benefit from it. So this is Kurt giving a truly honest opinion. And every week he's like, yeah, they're running a real NFL offense. They're learning footwork and timing and doing stuff under center. And I guess the under center stuff I want to harp on too, because I looked this up. Like Jaden Daniels, for example, in his entire career so far, has 59 pass attempts from under center. Caleb has 92 this year alone. Like, that's how much. And this is a kid who only had 84 snaps, period, in shotgun last year, had basically none in college. That's how much all this stuff's new to Caleb. All of this stuff he's being asked to do at a high level, using the full field. All these 5-7-step drop combos. And that's why Kurt Warner is watching this and he's not concerned. It was very funny because every week they try to bait him to be like, how worried are you about Caleb? Like this week they literally were like, Matt Spiegel was like, how worried are you about Caleb Williams? And Kurt was like, I thought Caleb was fine. And then he starts going off on tight end alignments and wide receiver landmarks and depth and all the other things that the Bears are fucking up on offense constantly. And you could tell Spiegel was just so disappointed. He just wanted someone to validate his Caleb panic.
He did. He sounded really sad.
Kurt Warner didn't even, like, it was Kurt Warner's response was so dismissive. It's like it hadn't even occurred to him to be concerned about Caleb. Yep. Kurt was like, what? People are worried about that game? Really? That was what you're worried about?
The noises he made were the same ones I made, where I was like, what do you mean think and so, Caleb had a bad game?
Yeah, like, what? And so you watch Caleb, and I mean, like, there are some really high-level throws on his tape. And I mean, yes, he has the highlight reel crazy scramble throw to DJ Moore, and that is awesome, because only, like, four guys can do that, and it's cool that we have one of them. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking, but whenever that kind of play happens for Caleb, people tend to immediately dismiss it out of hand, because they're like, well, he can make those plays, but what can he do in structure and on time? That's why my favorite throw in the game is, it's a 3rd-and-6 to Rome. He pulls the safety down to the flat with his eyes, creates a window to Rome, and then just fires a fucking piss missile about 25 yards on a line right up the sideline in between two defenders, whole shot. That was gorgeous. There's like 5-6 different pass plays in that game. They were getting chunk plays.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't finish in the red zone. And that's frustrating, too. But, like, red zone efficiency is another one of those things that, like BABIP in baseball, sometimes you run hot cold. The Bears, for, like, the first 4 weeks of the season, were scoring on like 90 touchdowns on like 90% of their red zone drives. And I said, fuck, that's going to regress and flip the other way for a couple weeks at some point, and that's going to really suck. And that's exactly what's happened. They've gone from like number one in scoring touchdowns in the red zone to like number 26 over the last 3-4 weeks. And that should normalize. And that's like all of this stuff. Like, there's so much of that happening. There's the penalties happening literally at the highest rate since this century has started. So that could continue like this, or at some point, likely, it settles down. Caleb has 12 batted passes this year. He had 9 all of last season. And I know people are like, well, he's short. Yes, he was short last year too. He still only had 9. Bryce Young is 5'9". He doesn't have this many batted passes. So
height doesn't really have much of a correlation.
Yeah, no, the most I was actually looking at, and Pro Football Reference only has data back to 2018, I think, on batted passes. And I think the most that I found in a season was like Justin Herbert with 23 one year. And I don't know if you guys know this about Justin Herbert, but he's a fucking mountain of a man.
Yeah.
So height doesn't
like historically, and like I think it does start in 2018. They really started to track that. But Drew Brees is like one of the best at avoiding batted passes in the history of the NFL.
So,
or back to 2018, and he's a little guy, like famously much smaller than he even says he is.
Right. So I don't think Caleb is going to continue to average two batted passes per game when that didn't happen in college, when that didn't happen last year. I don't think Rome is going to continue to drop every fucking contested catch this season. He's like unsustained. And that's the thing. It's frustrating in the moment. And I think you want to talk about meatball. I said some fucking stuff about Rome in that moment that I got really frustrated. But that too drops 50-50 ball. That stuff is also just generally, historically, it's statistical noise. A guy, if he has a cold streak, that usually means a hot streak's coming at some point. To use an expression that everyone knows, loves, and understands, the worm will turn on those for Rome, and he'll just start catching those 50-50 balls like crazy. And the batted passes, the penalties, all that, the red zone efficiency, all that will stabilize and revert to, like, regress positively. I truly believe that.
Yeah, and like, the
and
thing
at the same time,
this,
I understand.
In this game, Rome did catch a bunch of contested passes. He caught three on that first drive. He got hit by a guy, caught the pass anyway, and went down. But like, to the point with Caleb, it's a lot of people, a lot of Bears fans are watching these games, and like, it's the good stuff almost doesn't matter. It's like just waiting for that other foot to drop. You're waiting for the bad pass to happen.
Right.
And that is, justifies the dread that everyone is feeling. Yeah.
That is my main concern with Caleb, with how people are reacting to Caleb right now, is that he is operating from a balance sheet right now with people where he can't get any positives. He can only get negatives, because this man piped like 7 20-plus yard explosive completions in this game, and he got zero credit for any of them for people, because it's just assumed that Ben Johnson is doing that for him. And trust me, guys, I don't want to sound condescending when I say watch the tape, but watch the tape. None of those were fucking wide open guys. That's another thing I wanted to address. Skip, I must address this issue. I know that the Baltimore Ravens had some really bad defensive statistics early in the year. I know that. But two things there. They lost almost half of their lineup to injury at the same time, and they played Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen in like a 3-week span. That's going to fucking warp your numbers a little bit. They got healthy. They got Kyle Hamilton back. They got a healthy Roquan Smith back. They got a healthy Nate Wiggins back. They got all those guys back. They had everybody that they were expected to have except for their awesome defensive tackle, Justin Madubuike. But they got everybody back. They had a whole bye week to get stuff sorted, because if you watched their game against Buffalo or whatever, a lot of it was not – it wasn't talent issues. It was – I mean, coordinator issues, to be blunt. Some of their run fits were just hysterically bad, having two guys lined up in one gap and no guy in another. Like, they just bad usage of players. But like, even before their bye, they'd faced off with Matt Stafford and the Rams. They held him to 17 points at 243 yards. They lost because Cooper Rush sucks. But still, they held the Rams in check. And then they had a whole bye week to prepare for the Bears. And Kyle Hamilton was roaming the middle field taking shit away. There were some really cool, impressive blitzes. There was a blitz where DeAndre Swift just didn't fucking block anybody. There was a blitz that caused an intentional grounding where Colston Loveland just didn't run his hot route. Like, there's all kinds of these cascading failures for the Bears right now. And despite all that, they still move the ball. I think what they have, like 372 yards against the Ravens.
Yep.
And none of it was easy. I mean, they only had a 38% rushing success rate. It was mostly Caleb in not necessarily ideal situations, mostly expected pass situations, throwing piss missiles.
Out there, they're expecting him to throw piss. He's throwing passes instead.
He's throwing passes. Is he throwing the piss through his fly, or is he dropping his underpants to do it? We don't know. It's an important question. Anyways. I get it. People are fucking sick of hearing that it really looked, there's just a couple things stopping them, and it looks good on the tape, but I'm almost tired of saying it, guys, but like, it doesn't change that every week I watch it and I'm like, fuck me, man. It feels close. And you and I have brought these examples up multiple times, but it feels so much like the 2022 Lions in that first half under Ben Goff. And it feels so much like the 2023 Packers, that first half with Jordan Love and all those new receivers, where they just kept screwing things up left and right. And then those teams went on a second half run. And I'll tell you guys, if the second half run for this offense doesn't materialize, I'll be right there with you being concerned about Caleb at the end of the year. But I do think it's coming. The downside is that I don't know. A couple weeks ago, I would have said, as soon as that second half run hits on offense, we're going to be a real playoff contender. And then everyone on defense died again. And I'm not sure that even a second half offensive run is going to make us playoff contenders.
Yeah, so as far as Caleb is concerned, I mean, what I've been harping on as far as the accuracy issues for all season has been the timing of the offense. I didn't really see inaccuracy from Caleb. I saw a guy who was either a step too fast or a step too slow, and the ball was going to the right place, but he was not in time and rhythm with Ben Johnson's offense. So maybe from that perspective, me watching this game, I was like, damn, he's got the timing down. Like, this looks like a guy who is in control. This looks like a guy who has the rhythm. And that's why he was able to fire these balls into guys who had corners and safeties draped all over him. You know, Rome was getting touched catching these passes. DJ Oz had a bunch of passes where he caught a 7-yard pass and was immediately hit, but the ball was right on time. The ball was accurate. He had taken care of that timing. So that's solid for me from Caleb.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I don't have...
Was the interception bad? Absolutely. I'm not going to come out here and be like, well, the film shows that Caleb threw a great pass. No, he should not have thrown that fucking pass.
Well, the interception is one of those things where it's like, okay, there is no such thing as a good interception. And there are some interceptions where it's like, okay, it doinked off a guy's hands.
He's like a Jay Cutler interception.
Yeah,
right?
But it's like, or like the both interceptions that Mahomes had last night. Like, like neither one of them was his fault. But so, and I'm not, this was an interception that was Caleb's fault. But at the same time, this is a guy who has now thrown, what, 9 interceptions? 10 interceptions in 800?
Yeah, his interception rate this year is 1.8%. Like, you can't ask for better than that.
And that's up from 1.1% last year. So it's one of those things where, like, I don't want to belabor the point. And it's one of those interceptions where, like, I don't feel like... It's not one that sets off alarm bells because, like, he's just not seeing it. I can see what he saw.
Yeah.
And I can see why him being Caleb Williams with that howitzer on his right arm that he's got thought he could fit that ball in there. But hopefully, you know, and the nice thing about Caleb is he rarely makes the same mistake twice. So hopefully he learns from that. So I'm not going to try to excuse away the interception. Yeah, and if I had to give him a letter grade for this game because of that interception, it's like a C+. But like before that interception, if you took that interception out, it's a B+ or an A-, honestly. Like the film was, I thought when Ben Johnson came out and said, I thought Caleb, if you look at the full 60 minutes, played considerably better this week than he did the last two.
Yep.
I 100% agree.
Well, there's no question.
Yeah.
There's no question he played much better. Like I've seen people point to, I saw a lot of people on the internet harping on the overthrow to Devin Duvernay in the end zone, which he looked to me more like a spot throw, and it landed exactly where I expected it to go.
He was thrown to a landmark, and And this is one other thing I wanted to say about Caleb, and I think we are in the era right now where people are like really into EPA per drop back and statistics like that. And I'm not saying those statistics don't have value, but one of the problems I have with like EPA per drop back and stuff is that like fan bases, the fans really liked to like Fields had a crazy run in terms of like EPA per play in 2022 in the second half because when he was just running for 100 yards a game and the CPOE was really high because they only let Justin throw 15 passes a game and the passes that he did throw were mostly deep balls and he has a nice deep ball. And so like and Mitch Trubisky in 2018, I want to say was like 8th. In EPA per play or 8th in QBR, like because it heavily values like timely scrambles and stuff. And so a couple things there on EPA per play, like with Caleb right now, his EPA per pass, EPA per drop back is like 14th, 15th. I think excluding garbage time, his EPA per pass is like 12th in the league right now, so that's good. His EPA per play is sunk by the fact that right now he is a negative EPA player on the season in terms of running the football. And even that is mostly because he's got like 4 failed quarterback sneaks right now. And those are all huge EPA per play things. I'm not saying I'm not frustrated he didn't get them on those sneaks, But at the same time, I don't know that I'm going to base a whole lot of my evaluation of where Caleb Williams is as a quarterback on his ability to run a quarterback sneak. Yeah. And it's a huge negative rush EPA with the bobbled snaps. And the bobbled snaps suck. But at the same time, I do not think he's going to continue. God help me. I don't think he's going to continue to bobble a snap as often as snaps have been bobbled so yeah. far this year. I think him and Drew Dahlman are getting used to each other. So, like, back away from the EPA per play shit a little bit. But also, when you want to even if you do want to compare, like, Caleb to Justin Fields or past Bears quarterbacks who failed, I think, like, Caleb right now is 14th. And adjusted net yards per attempt. And that's on he's like 16th in passing attempts. So he's right in the average in terms of how often he's been asked to throw the ball. This is not an offense that is protecting the quarterback or afraid to let the quarterback throw the ball. He's 14th in adjusted net yards per attempt. He's 12th overall in passing yards. He's like 12th, I think, in regular yards per attempt. He's 6th in yards per completion, et cetera. Like, I think when people focus too much on, like, EPA per dropback or EPA – or not even EPA per dropback, which I actually tend to like more than EPA per play. But people focus on EPA per play. We are in an age of – I call them gremlin rules quarterbacks, where there's, like, Justin Fields and Jalen Hurts. And Jalen's, like, one of the best versions of this. I'm going to give that to you, buddy. But it's like you got to use a lot of play action. You can only use them in these formations, and you can only ask them to make these kinds of throws, and you have to use heavy QB design runs too, and you can only let them throw about 25 times a game. If you get into 30, you're getting into dicey territory. We're in an era where we have a lot of those guys, and as long as you keep them in their box, they can produce the EPA like crazy. You know, that's what Jaden's whole season was last year. It was an EPA Gobert season. But it's in that box. And right now, there's not really a box that Caleb Williams is in. They're asking him to run, you know, Kurt Warner always says, it looks like a real NFL offense. And when Kurt Warner says that, what he's saying is, it looks like a real NFL offense from 20 years ago, where we did hard things, where we did 40 passes a game, 5 7-step drops. You had to read the whole field. There wasn't any of this easy RPO bullshit. That's what Kurt Warner means, and that's what Caleb's being asked to do. So, like, it matters to me that Caleb, even in his, quote, bad games, is 285 yards. He's on track for almost 4,000 yards passing, even when we all agree that we think we've only seen his floor in this offense in this first half, not the ceiling or anything near it. Like, it matters to me that he's being asked to do a veteran quarterback's passing volume, dropback volume. Like, that to me is a level of trust in him from Ben Johnson that we haven't seen past coaching staffs give past quarterbacks in this town. So yeah. That kind of stuff matters to me.
All right. And that is 28 minutes on Caleb Williams in a game where, if I were going to talk about it, I might talk about Caleb sometime at the very end of my hour-long podcast. So
I said this, but I let's really move hope, on. I really hope Caleb goes off for so many reasons. First of all, Bears fans, at least the cool ones in the Discord, they deserve it. They deserve the stress-free life of just watching Caleb Williams put up numbers. But I would also, I'd love to enter this offseason with Caleb having thrown for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns and erasing Eric Kramer and answering the question of, is he Chicago's guy? Just so we can spend so much more time on other stuff.
I mean, without the existential dread. This is what's going to happen, Kyle. If he throws for like 400 yards against the Bengals or something, we're just not going to talk about him at all next week. We're going to talk about the running backs. Yeah. We're going to talk about the linemen. We'll talk about the defense, and we will never say Caleb Williams. So,
yeah,
here's
long story short, if
here's
you're asking
the thing that I
worried
would
about
talk
Caleb,
about.
We're not.
If I were to talk about this game, the number one thing I would talk about are penalties. We kind of already addressed the penalties. They are unsustainable. They're terrible. I don't love that Ben Johnson, after the game, kind of said, hey, the team leaders have to take care of this at this point. We've been hammering it home. I'm not sure I love that from a head coach. I'm going to count
that in
the merits department.
I'm not sure who those leaders are either. Yeah. Because we know, at least we know from Ty Dunn, that people did not fucking like when Caleb tried to be a leader last year. It was treated as some awful fucking thing that he was like, hey, Rome or DJ or whomever, could we run this route a little differently? They were like, who the fuck does this kid think he is?
Right.
So I don't know how well it's going to be received if Caleb or Rome, who's only a second year, like, I'm kind of wondering who these veteran players are. Like, is it Cole Kmet? Does Cole Kmet need to whip these people into
shape? It's
got
to be Joe Tooney. Does he got to go out there and be like, hey, stop fucking false starting. Hey, Drew, don't wiggle your fucking hands so much. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, but I mean, this bleeds into another thing that we haven't touched yet, which I think has been become a huge factor for these Bears, which is our special teams are very poorly coached. We are committing penalties now on special teams that are like, here's what the Ravens wanted to do this game. It's very simple. They wanted to Kirk Ferentz the shit out of this game. They said, we are overmatched. We have a quarterback who can run but can't necessarily pass. Maybe he can hit some short throws. So what we're going to do is we're going to minimize possessions in this game. We're going to try to burn clock when we're on offense so that we can keep the game close. And then we are going to try to get one really good turnover that is going to flip the tide of this game. That is the Kirk Ferentz playbook, right? Part of that is great punting. It's clock management and it is field position management. Torrey Taylor nails a punt. Maybe the most perfect punt we've seen in the NFL this season, stops it at the 1 yard line, just inside the 1 yard line. Beautiful, right? The Bears have the field position game won. They're thwarting the Ravens' plans here. This could have turned the whole game on its head. And instead, the Bears punt team, and I can't even be annoyed at the refs about a fucking illegal formation call because they are lined up in one of the stupidest ways I've ever, it is plain for everyone to see that they are completely incorrect, that they are lined up in a manner which is not allowable for an NFL punt formation. And the thing is, Torrey Taylor kicks it again. It's not as good a punt. It goes out like the 23 or something. I think the refs could have called the Bears for it yet again. When I was looking at that play again on the All-22, I was like, I think they did it again. And the refs were just like, I can't throw this flag twice in a row. And the punt wasn't that great. So fuck it. We're just going to let it go. But this has just been so consistent with Richard Hightower, whether it was last year when he was still here and he wouldn't change his field goal. So it kept getting blocked or
how
this year.
How was he a survivor? How was he
survivor
of this purge? I don't understand it.
And he has become the beneficiary of, you know, Torrey turning it around the last 4 weeks or so and just saying, fuck it. You know, I'm going to punt exactly like I normally would at Iowa. And lo and behold, you know, it's going out inside the five. He's kicking some big punts, which is great. Or Jake Moody coming in, you know, this the third round kicker who falls into our lap, nails a bunch of kicks right in a row. And yeah, one of them still got blocked. And a part of me does wonder, is this just the Richard Hightower tell that got it blocked? But it feels like he's lucking out from that. Oh, man, Kyle, our kick return, our kickoff return coverage is brutal. It doesn't make any sense. The formation, they're blocking like on the complete wrong side of the field. When we're kicking off, for some reason, Cairo is sending it to the left. We only have three guys defending the left side. The other seven guys are on the right side running down the field. And it doesn't seem like they're collapsing or anything. And now we're giving up these big returns. And it's just people are like, well, how was that play supposed to work? What was the point of that formation? And I do not much like Richard Hightower, and I feel like he is costing us a lot. And it
goddamn, you almost went like Dr. Seuss there. I do not like you, Hightower.
I do not like you, Hightower man. I do not like you, Sam. I am, but in this game, it come out even more because of the game plan the Ravens had.
Yeah.
When a team is out there trying to beat you on the ground by managing the clock and by managing field position, your special teams become more important.
Yeah, I don't
think when Richard Hightower sticks out like a sore thumb.
I don't think enough people really focused on the fact that like the Ravens limit, how many drives did the Bears even have?
They ground this game to a halt.
So that was part of it too, is that like the Bears actually, they had very long drives, and it's true that it's frustrating that they're not finishing in the red zone, but like I said, a lot of that is like that is just random variance throughout a football season, and it should regress positively at some point. But like they needed to finish the drives they had, but like you also usually get like twice as many drives as that during an average football game. The Ravens did an excellent job. And it's hard to blame Dennis Allen too much because again, he was down to cornerback 6 and 7. But you know who it's not hard to blame, Travis?
Who?
It's not hard to blame Ryan Poles.
It's not hard to blame.
Because Ryan Travis, Poles. Did you see, hold on, let me pull it up.
To answer your question, by the way, the third quarter of this game was entirely two Ravens drives. So
yeah. Like, truly incredible that they...
They just slowed the whole fucking game down.
Yeah, so here we are. Hold on, I want to pull it up because it's good. Okay, Bears pass rush win rates versus the Ravens. Mm-hmm. Grady Jarrett, 18.8%. That's good. Good to have you back, Grady. That's outstanding.
Also, Grady, snap counts exactly 53%. That's right where we want to keep him.
Yep, keep him healthy. Montez Sweat, 15.8%. That's pretty good for an edge. It's not outstanding. It's not elite, but for, you know, a solid edge that I believe Montez Sweat is, 15.8%. That's not bad. Andrew Billings, 8.3%. For a big fat nose tackle like that, that's not bad. So Jervon Dexter, and this one's going to hurt you, Travis, 0.0%.
Mm.
Shamar Turner, rip, 0.0%.
Can't bag on Shamar Turner anymore. He's out for the season, folks.
Dio Odengbo, 0.0%. 0%.
Boy, that shows up on film. 0.0% for Dio.
Daniel Hardy, 0.0%.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Ford, 0.0%.
Damn.
It's been 4 fucking years. 4 fucking off seasons.
Yeah.
They have had 4 top 10 draft picks. They have had possession of 8 second-round draft picks, I believe, in that time. They didn't use all of them because they traded one of them for fucking Chase Claypool and another for Montez Sweat. But he has had, and he's had unlimited cap space for several years. He had more resources than any fucking general manager in the sport for 4 years. And he has not assembled a competent defensive line in that time. They cannot fucking rush the passer with 4 ever against anybody, and the only way they get pressure is when they have the Mr. Glass, Kyler Gordon, healthy and available to do nickel blitzes, and when they have Jalen Johnson and company to play coverage behind him so that they can buy time to get home, and then so that Allen can take chances sending those fucking blitzes, and without defensive backs that they can trust while they send those blitzes, they can't fucking pressure anybody. The Ravens had 3 pressured dropbacks all day long.
Yeah.
Three fucking pressured dropbacks.
Now, I will say this. Dom Robinson got hurt on the first play. I can't believe I'm saying this, but losing Dominic Robinson at this point and then losing Shamar Turner, we were kind of just out of guy. Austin Booker, by the way, did we activate him? I haven't checked.
They did activate him today because they had to put Shamar on IR. So
okay. Oh, my goodness. That would have been a different conversation, too, if he was out for the season.
That is I don't want to, I really liked how Austin Booker looked in the preseason. I certainly believe there is a possibility that if he's bulked up and stuff, he can really be a force. But we're at the point where you are like begging for Austin Booker to be a fucking transformative edge rusher. And that's unfair to put on the guy. But like, god damn, there is no excuse for this defensive line if assembled after all these years by a competent general manager. There's just no fucking way it should be this bad. But we don't have a competent general manager. We have Ryan Poles.
Yeah, and I will say, just for the on-field product, what happened here is kind of obvious. Like, with Dom Robinson out, we ended up having to play Dio Dangbo for 92% of our defensive snaps. We ended up having to play.
Boy, that's a lot of opportunities to win a single fucking pass rush, though, isn't it?
You'd think.
92 snaps and you can't win one of them?
He was out there for 81% of his snaps.
Not one little pity fuck snap. Can you get a pressure? No, I'm not even asking for a sack, man. I'm not unrealistic. I'm not asking for Jesus to come down. I'm just asking for one tiny little pressure. I'd like you to see you make Tyler Huntley sweat a little bit.
The completion of my thought here is that those are the only two defensive ends we have at that point. We don't have anybody else. Daniel Hardy exists. He's a special teamer. He had some spot snaps in there to spell some guys on those long Ravens drives, but that's what he was for. He was just there to give them a little bit of a break before they went back on. Dennis Allen likes to move guys around. He likes to say, hey, this guy who's playing inside, he's going to play outside. This guy who's played outside, he's going to play inside. We had 2 defensive ends in this game. They didn't move. Dio and Tez stayed right where they were. It was Dexter Billings and Jarrett in the middle, and then sometimes the coward Jonathan Ford as well. But none of those guys are moving to the edge. They aren't really playing defensive end snaps. So what we got was kind of the worst we possibly could. And we had our top 5, by the way, during the broadcast, they said our top 3 defensive backs were out. That's wrong. Our top five defensive backs are out. We are starting CB6 right now. So there's just not, there's not much Dennis Allen can do, you know? Yeah, like, what are you going to do? Like,
I have zero anger at Dennis Allen for this. I have all the smoke and anger for Ryan Poles. But I have a great deal of concern that I don't know. Like, I would like to see them make some fucking moves here. Like, I'm surprised that they have not gotten another corner in the building today. Like, it's wild to me that they're not making roster.
We saw some trades happening for corners, and the Bears were not part of those. I think hopefully Tyreek Stevenson is back this week. I mean, this defense did look a lot better when Tyreek improved, even without Jalen, even without Terrell Smith, even without Kyler Gordon. So if he can play up to the level he was playing at, and that is, like, the expectation of that is kind of insane, because he was playing at a level that was way beyond what he normally plays at. Right before he got injured, he was locking down every receiver he was on. If he could do that, do we have a better chance? If Austin Booker comes back and he looks really good, and Dom Rob hopefully isn't out for long, maybe just a couple of weeks, maybe we could come back for that Vikings game. We got people healthy. The defense can get wild again. But God, that's a lot to pin on young guys, on guys who haven't proven it over extended periods of time. So I understand the trepidation of being like, okay, well, so this offense turns it on. Yeah. But what about this defense? They're so hurt right now.
Right. There's two different doom meters right now. If your number one goal for the Bears this season was the playoffs and you want to doom right now, I'm right there with you, pal. It's hard for me right now to figure out how they get this defense competitive enough against some of the offenses we're seeing soon, to really make a difference. So I feel way less good about their chances of making the playoffs than I did 72 hours ago.
Kyle, do you want to know a sneaky, let's be angry at Ryan Poles thing that I thought about a lot while watching this game?
Always.
Okay.
Because to be clear, the most rational thing that someone can be right now is angry at Ryan Poles and saying he's shit at his job.
That's right. Okay, so
no one would argue this.
For most games, the Bears this season have been playing two linebackers on the field, just primarily. And obviously, if Kyler Gordon were healthy all the time, which is a fucking pipe dream at this point, but if he were, that's what we would prefer. We like to have Kyler on the field. He blitzes a lot. He's basically the cash position for the Bears. So, Kyle, if you were going to have to run three linebackers out there, and one of those guys should be replacing a sort of cash position, hybrid linebacker, safety, cornerback guy, wouldn't you like want, say, a really fast linebacker with a lot of athleticism who's maybe not as bulky as other guys, but like kind of quick in coverage, quick to blitz guys, right? Like that sort of Kyler Gordon, but with more muscle. Wouldn't that be the guy you would want to like put out there hypothetically? Because to me, I kept thinking, damn, if they're going to have to play Edmund, Sewell, and Edwards on the field this many times, wouldn't you want one of them to be Ruben Hippolyte? Like that guy seems like the exact makeup of a football player who I would put in as a panic replacement for Kyler Gordon's job. And so it's just very funny to me that Ruben Hippolyte hasn't got a snap since week 3, where he only got 2, and he has disappeared off the face of the fucking earth since then. Thanks for wasting that pick on absolutely nothing, guy who every person on the planet knew was not an NFL player.
Well, and I would love if our second round pick, regular tackle length arms, could be playing right now instead of an undrafted Canadian who has T-Rex arms. That would be super cool. And that is one thing I will say about,
we have to talk about Theo.
Not to bring it back to Caleb or anything, but one thing I also thought about, the first couple drives are really cool, very mixing boots and mixing play action and stuff. But like, I thought the second quarter to lull that they always have the last couple weeks has been, so the first like 4 weeks of the season, the Bears had a very high pass rate over expectation. And the last 3 weeks, they have had a very high run rate over expectation. And you know, I guess some people could say, oh, they don't trust Caleb Williams. I don't fucking buy that for a second. Look at some of the pass concepts that he was asked to execute in the second half. But it definitely feels like Ben Johnson's very afraid of leaving Theo Benedict exposed in true pass sets, and he's doing everything he can to avoid that. And that was working fine when the run game was working, but when it wasn't in this game, it really showed up that for a while there, they didn't have an effective run game, and he was scared to just let Caleb throw it on first, second, third down. Now, in the third quarter, fourth quarter, when they didn't have a choice, it worked out okay. Caleb is doing a great job avoiding sacks. He can create for himself. Caleb was just, you know, doing what he had to do. But yeah, the fact that Theo Benedict has obvious limitations in pass pro is hurting this offense. And it's hurting them in the red zone, too, because they can't just run straight. He's scared to run straight drop back passes in the red zone.
Yep.
He's trying to run for everything. Because they're just, again, they're scared. And then it's not necessarily an unfounded fear, because on the very first drive of the game, the third down play where Caleb takes a sack is because Theo Benedict immediately loses. And it still would have been okay if Kyle Monongai had gotten into his route as fast as he was supposed to, but he took forever to fucking release and run his route. And so by the time he does release, Caleb is already running for his life. So that was a bummer. But yeah, it's Theo Benedict is a problem, and I don't know what the real answer is. This because one, Braxton Jones is now on IR. Two, like yeah, he did improve the run game, but at the same time, like it is it like you traded effectiveness in your run game for true pass sets in your passing game. So
yeah.
it's a real Sophie's choice as far as football is concerned.
Yeah, I was coming into this week already prepared because I had seen a lot of weird chatter from Bears fans. It's like the opposite of the Caleb narrative. Bears fans had immediately accepted that actually Theo Benedict is just really good at football, and we discovered like this beautiful gem, and we put him in, and everything suddenly worked, and everything's perfect, and it's because of Theo Benedict, and can you believe him? Do you remember that time that he wore a Speedo on Hard Knocks? That was pretty cool. He's a great guy. And I was already going to come in here regardless of what happened and be like, guys, the left tackle position has not been fixed. He kind of sucks at pass blocking, which we haven't had to care about because our run game has been so good. I thought in this game, maybe our run game would still be good. Who knows? But I'm almost glad that he got exposed so that maybe Bears fans could slow the roll and realize that we still have a gaping hole at left tackle. We also, I mean, it should be mentioned, I've given Jonah Jackson a lot of grace here. After hammering him repeatedly in the offseason, he's not very good at pass blocking. He was also responsible for a lot of pressure up the middle. Run blocker, but he's also not really the pass blocking answer there at right guard.
He was rough, I thought, against Minnesota and Detroit. I thought he was pretty good after that. And then I feel like the last 2 weeks, he's kind of struggled a little bit. And the thing is, when we thought Jonah Jackson was hopefully going to be the worst offensive lineman on this unit, that's really not such a big deal because he's a guy that can pass block just fine on those play action, on those moving pockets. He's a great run blocker. You can usually help him in true pass sets so that he's not exposed. And like, there are very few offensive lines in football that have five plus starters at every position. He's a perfectly cromulent guard. The problem is that the left tackle position has been such a black hole this year, regardless of who is there, that they can't really afford to help anybody else out. All the help is going to left tackle. And so you're in more situations where Jonah is standing alone and it's exposing what he's not quite as good at. So that is frustrating there for sure.
Yeah. The question is, at what point does this become such an emergency that we pull one of our two levers, which is either Ozzie is going in at left tackle, regardless of if he's ready or not, or Are we going to move Darnell Wright mid-season to left tackle and leave Ozzie at right tackle? And what does that do to the offensive line? Because obviously, I think some folks are going to say, like, well, this is one game. This is one bad game for Theo. You know, let's see how he does next week. He's been bad at pass blocking the whole time. It's just we haven't had to care. For the same reason that Kyle and I have been coming on here and saying, well, the run game was working, so Caleb didn't really have to pass that much. It wasn't that big of a deal. We haven't really had to pay attention to Theo that much, but this is basically what we've been getting from those obvious passing downs. He's overmatched. He's in over his head here. Not in run blocking, which is great, but pass blocking wise, he doesn't have the talent to get up to the level he needs to be as an NFL left tackle, I don't think. And so I would like Bears fans to just remember that left tackle is not fixed. that is a position of need still at this point. And again, if you want to point at our glorious general manager who has only ever put one fifth round pick towards left tackle, that was his very first draft as GM. And then he tried Kieran Amagaji, who is now, I guess, a guard who exists somewhere in the void. I haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Kieran when I was talking about how Ozzie can't get on the field. Kieran can't get on the field.
Hey, like, remember how our general manager thought he was adding depth and he didn't because he just drafted a random talent guy?
He has two tackle prospects on the roster that he's invested actual capital into, and neither of them can get on the field over a Canadian undrafted free agent who, again, has T-Rex arms.
That's right. And yeah, Ozzie... like, there's no way in hell he drafted him thinking he was going to be a right tackle, right? So again, even if Ozzie is good, and I do like Ozzie's tape, and I think he could be a good left tackle in the future, this is a guy who obviously our scout team and the people underneath Ryan Poles, if not Ryan Poles himself, thought would be a left tackle prospect. He surely didn't draft him thinking he was going to replace Darnell Wright. So that's another failure to assess talent along the offensive line former offensive lineman.
Well, and like, I thought them taking Theo was proof that they knew Braxton was healthy.
Yep.
Because I thought, like, okay, I see the vision here. You play Braxton in his contract year. You hope he balls out. You let him go get his money. And then you have that whole year to redshirt Ozzie and get him ready to play NFL left tackle. And so I thought that's not a bad plan. But then it turns out that they had no idea how ready Braxton Jones was to play this year. It turns out the answer was not ready at all.
Yeah.
So that made me very angry.
It's painful. It's very painful. It's painful also to have Nashawn Wright out there for every fucking defensive snap. Nick McLeod's out there for 89% of your defensive snaps. Like, It's we're in a state right now defensively. And yeah, I mean, Kyle, it's been so long. We used to be the place you would go if you wanted to see pressure generated by a front four. That used to be the Chicago Bears identity. And that feels so long ago now. Ever since Ryan Poles got here, it has been the opposite of that. It has been no fucking pressure from our front four. It is, and only now with Dennis Allen have we seen like any pressure at all, it feels like.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing about Eberflus, is that he was ostensibly a Marinelli Lovey guy.
There was, like, the Marinara. You found it.
The Marinara. But, like, philosophically, he is almost more like old Bears defensive coordinator Greg Blash, where he, like, wanted his defensive line to stuff the run first and let his linebackers and everything do the pressure. And that's just very weird. But yeah, the result is that it's left us with a roster that can't get home with four, and a secondary that's now so decimated they can't blitz. It's a bad place to live.
Not great defensively. Offensively, I saw a lot of good signs. And I do think the run game is, you know, it's going to be up and down. Some games the run game works, some teams the
pass game works. Yeah, I thought there was a hard overreaction to their success for 2 weeks, too, where people like, DeAndre Swift's not a problem anymore. That it's like, well, no. They just started doing the stuff that DeAndre Swift is good at. But the problem is that defenses know what DeAndre Swift is good at, too. So there was going to come a game where they didn't give DeAndre Swift the edge. And then it's up to Kyle Monongai making things happen between the tackles. And he's just not fast, shifty, or very experienced yet. So there are still going to be games where the run game is just stuffed. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. Just to put this game in a nutshell, it was a disheartening loss. But on the spectrum of Bears losses all time, not really a dispiriting one. You don't want to lose this game as the Chicago Bears, but it wasn't a loss that made me question, like, how good are the Bears overall? Is our quarterback even the guy? What is this roster? Is our head coach worth a damn? To me, watching this game, and I know you mentioned it earlier, I just watch football games, all right? Like, I like watching football. I like watching college football, professional football, and I can judge them all in their own little game-sized vacuum. This just looks like any Bears game where the Bears have beaten a team that's clearly better than them from the last 10 years, right? We ground the game down. We made them have fewer drives. We took a bunch of long, annoying 4 yards and a cloud of dust run drives where we're taking 9 minutes at a time. And for some reason, the other quarterback, who looks like he's playing really well, and he's stymied down in the red zone a couple of times. They get a couple field goals. You pull it out at the end when he gets frustrated and throws a pick. Like, I've seen this before. It happens. You know, it's one football game that we lost. We had just won four of those in a row. We weren't going to win every football game after that. So to me, it's just like, we're 4-3. We're going into this game against the Bengals, a Bengals team that just lost to the winless Jets. Feeling pretty good about things overall. I would say, folks, if you watch this game and you got away from it, and even like an hour and 2 hours later, you were just having a complete breakdown. You know, you were like, the Bears are terrible. All hope is lost. Nothing will ever be good with this team. And maybe in my own life, here's my challenge for you. I want you to pick a random college football game this weekend, and I want you to watch it. Can't be your favorite team. Even better if you don't like college football. Just pick one and watch it front to back. And I want you to ask yourself when you wanted to stop watching that football game. And I also want to ask how you watched that football game. Because my guess is that if A, you were happy watching the full football game, then B, you probably didn't hyperfixate on one of those teams' quarterbacks and only stare at them until they made a single mistake that drove you over the edge. That's my guess. And I want you to take something away from that, that there is enjoyment in football. There is enjoyment in watching a full football game and just 3.5 hours of fun and then being done with it and not making this big grand declaration on the state of things at the end of it. That's my challenge to you, folks.
Travis, yes, Travis is very, like, I understand you, folks. I also understand the mentality of none of this matters in the long run if the Bears don't have a quarterback. Right. And I just need proof that this guy is the quarterback. So I feel you. I understand you. And I understand if you're sick and fucking tired of me saying, you know, I looked at the tape, and that's fine. I get it, too. You might, at some point, the results have got to match. I just, I don't know how to say it other than that. I still don't feel any less optimistic about the results eventually matching the process than I did a week ago. I don't. So at some point, it's going to click, baby.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, stay tuned. I think we're close. I'm sticking with my original prediction. I thought I was going to make a statement this week. I'm going to pull back. All right, I'm gonna stick with what I originally thought. Eight games to get it right. The ninth game, the Bears are going to lock in, right? This is the eighth game against the Bengals. I said, if the Bears go 4-4, I think it's a toss-up. If they get in the playoffs 5-3, I think they make it there. I'm going to stick with everything that I said, but gosh, I like what I saw on the offensive side of the ball in this one. Not so much the defensive side of the ball. Please, God, come back, Tyreek, but I like what I saw on the offensive side of the ball, and that is that stands in such stark contrast to what Bears media has been pushing out there this week,
it's
dude.
It's like I said, it's really funny because every like national, not the hot take artist, the Colin Howards, but like every national football person, especially those that watch any kind of tape, has been so befuddled, I think, by the panic when they talk to people in Chicago, because most of them are like, yeah, there was a lot of encouraging stuff. And that's because, again, I think there's just this local media lens only on what has happened before in Chicago. And I think national people have a much more ability to zoom out and be like, well, Caleb doesn't look that much different than so-and-so looked at this stage and so-and-so looked in this state. They're not comparing him solely to Justin Fields, Mitch Trubisky, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. They're like, yeah, this is what development looks like for a quarterback sometimes. He's not anywhere near the event horizon. That's what I keep repeating to people. I'm not trying to cope for Caleb or anything. When he reaches that point where his production is below the threshold where almost all of the outcomes are bad, I'll tell you, and I'll be right there flop sweating with you. Yeah. As long as he's above that line, and he's already above that line right now, folks. He really is. Like, I just, in the history of where he's at right now, is nowhere that should concern you in terms of what he can still be. If he starts going down, I'll join you in panicking. If he trends up, and most guys trend up, they do. Even the bad ones mostly trend up. I was actually looking the first seven games of Justin's second season just to remind myself of, you know, how much worse it can actually look. Like, through the first seven games of 2022, Justin, I think, had four touchdowns, five interceptions, was completing, I think, 56% of his passes, had taken 28 sacks, I believe, already. At this stage, Caleb again has taken 12. It was real fucking grim. He was already below that line where it was like, it's been too bad already through this number of starts. It's concerning. That was where Justin already was. Caleb, I swear to God, he's not there. And I'm not saying that because I don't want him to be there. I'm saying that because he's not there. The data is not there to concern you. Yeah. So when that button needs to be pushed, I'll push it. But yeah, I hope you're not sick of me saying that. I don't think it's time to push it yet.
Yeah, our good friend of the pod, Nick, who comes on and does the draft with us. He comes on, he does the season preview with us every year, Packer fan. He mentioned something. I can't remember if he said it on the actual season preview or if it was just in a conversation later. But he mentioned that Chicago was strange and that it was the only sports town where it felt like people could only refer to historical precedent if it related to Chicago sports. Like, nobody in Chicago will ever say, this quarterback, Caleb Williams, it could be like Steve Young, or this quarterback, Caleb Williams, could be like Blake Bortles, you know, on the good or bad end of the spectrum. They'll be like, well, is he a Jay Cutler type or is he a Mitch Trubisky type? Right, they can only refer to Bears.
How does he compare to Jim McMahon?
Right, is he Richard Dent esque in his opinions? Well, what's his diet like? Is his diet like Walter Payton or Michael Jordan?
Is he Jack Concannon?
And at the time, I kind of dismissed this, where I was like, that's just a rude thing for a Packers fan to say. And it's
that? It was 100% correct.
As time has gone on, it has gone beyond correct and into the realm of, like, I feel like this is a foundational pillar of Chicago sports, almost, that Bears fans can only conceive of the Bears within the mythology of the Bears. And it is getting in the way of Caleb just being a normal fucking quarterback right now. And I don't know what to do with that, because I feel like we watch too much football for that to happen. But I feel like a lot of Bears fans and a lot of the local media either only have time to watch the Bears or choose to only watch the Bears. And through that lens, Caleb is a very scary proposition. But through the lens of the NFL as a whole, he's fine. He's just a normal second-year quarterback in a new system, doing pretty well.
Everybody has their metrics that they choose to look at, and I know there are some where Caleb's doing worse than others. I have always – the main reason I use adjusted net yards per attempt is because, one, it is the stat that overtime has most correlated to wins. So I think it's good in that metric. But it's also just because I can pull adjusted net yards per attempt data for like 50 years really easily.
Sure.
So it's easy for me to back test it historically. And again, Caleb is 14th in that through almost half the season as a second year quarterback. That's a win for 98% of second year quarterbacks in history. I understand that Jaden Daniel or that Drake May is out there making it look worse than it is, but like it also by adjusted net yards per attempt. I wanted to point this out. Caleb yesterday, even with that awful interception, Caleb, his adjusted net yards per attempt for the day was like 5.93 yards. To put that in context, Justin Fields' career adjusted net yards per attempt is 4.9 yards. So in the terrible Caleb game that had some people like jumping off the ship, Caleb was a full yard better in the aggregate than Justin Fields has been in his career. And if you're like, okay, well, Justin Fields is ass, you're always saying that, Kyle. I get that. A 5.9 Anya, if it was his season mark, would be good, I think, for 20th in the NFL right now. So in his really horrible game that's got everyone jumping off, he performed effectively like the 20th best quarterback in the NFL this season. I don't think that's panic time for a second-year quarterback. I just don't.
I agree. Everybody, yeah. Everybody just relax.
Oh, don't fucking do that. Don't do the Aaron Rodgers. Don't do that. Don't do that to them.
Relax. We're coming for him.
Don't talk down to our, people. So, don't relax if you don't want to. But, you know, you could relax.
No, absolutely relax. You sons of... You motherfucker. You relax right now. Get out. Relax. Get out. Stop listening to this podcast and go relax. Lay down.
All right.
Put a cold pack on your face. Eat right. Some M&Ms.
Here's to hoping Caleb and the offense just rip the shit out of the Bengals so everybody can take a breather. We all need it.
Damn it. All right, see you next week, buddy.
See ya.
Way out that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.